Canada, Richard Ford's much-anticipated new novel tells the story of a 15-year-old kid named Del Parsons, whose life has changed irrevocably after his parents were arrested for robbing a bank. He's taken across the border from Montana to the wilds of Saskatchewan, separated from his twin sister and from any sense of home. Mr. Ford has published 4 short story collections and 6 previous novels. Independence Day won the Pulitzer Prize and the Penn Faulkner Award in 1996. Canada is published by Echo, and I'm very pleased that it brings Richard Ford back to our show today. Hello.
I'm really pleased to be here, Leonard. Thanks.
The story is set in 1960 when your protagonist, Del, is 15 and about to start high school. You've written about teenage boys before. What is it about this particular age in the early 1960s that remains so interesting to you?
I do think it's a point in a child's life when childhood itself begins to be left behind and the first mornings of adult life occur. So it seemed to be a kind of a border that he passes over. And for that reason, it seems dramatic to me.
Well, this also isn't the first time you've written about how someone is affected by bad decisions made by their parents.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, children, you know, are always affected by the decisions made by their parents, and sometimes even loving parents, as is the case in Canada, loving parents make disastrous decisions. You know, they rob a bank. And so what happens then to the kids of bank robbers?
Well, in this case, Del even feels that his parents getting married was a mistake.
Yeah, they were mismatched.
He thinks they were a bad match. And
they were.
Can you tell us a bit about what they're like? And well, why they would have married?
Well, they would have married for the same reason that a lot of people married, because someone got pregnant. Del's father was a bombardier in World War II, and his mother was a Jewish child of Oregonians, or rather of Washingtonians, and she was headed for college and headed for a life married to a college professor, and then. And the unlikely she got pregnant, and when she did, they got married, and then family started right away.
And they wind up in a small town.
Yeah, father was staying in the Air Force, and they end up in Great Falls, Montana, with twin children, and the marriage begins to sort of disintegrate around the edges without anybody really saying so, but it drove them to desperate acts.
The book is a lot about how events we have no control over can shape our lives. Why is it that one of the ideas you wanted to explore, especially with a 15-year-old who isn't fully formed yet and doesn't really know much about the world and about life yet?
I think I must feel that there is a sort of a truth-telling capacity in the relative simplicity of the speech. Now, I don't think that the interior life is simple at all, but I do think when you try, and this is artifice too. I don't know that all 15-year-old kids do this, but in my books they do for the sake of the readers. I think when he tries to give language, child's language, to rather complex human emotions, that a certain kind of truth emerges.
And you're telling it in his voice.
Yes.
Getting into the mind of a 15-year-old,
yes,
is a tricky thing, because you want to give him all of the insight that you have as a writer.
Right.
And at the same time, you can't give him too much insight or too much knowledge because he's 15 years old.
Well, laid into this book is the intuitions and the intelligence of a 65-year-old man, because ultimately the book comes to present tense, and so balancing an adult perspective with a child's perspective was the real challenge of the book for me, because you're right, there are times when a child's perspective and a child's vocabulary would be inadequate to not only to the emotions, but to what the book wanted to say.
Well, is it part of the trick in pulling something like this off, finding that voice? Is it something that just came right away?
No, it didn't come right away. Other voices in books that I've written have seemed more natural. This seemed to me to require a lot more cultivation to be able to mingle an adult voice with a child's. But it, on the other hand, you know, like I said before, it's artifice. Readers, I believe, will let you lean on them. Readers will let you operate on them if you just do it well, if you tell them something that they really didn't know but feel they need to know.
And if they get engaged, then they just go along with you.
That's right.
It seems to take Del a little while to realize just how profoundly his parents' mistake will affect his own life. Does he believe at all in fate? Does he think that this was all inevitable?
No. I don't think so. I think that his reluctance to reconcile what his parents do is just the reluctance of faith in his parents that comes from feeling that life can't be different from how it is. And that's what causes him to be slow. I don't think he has, well, I shouldn't say I don't think he has, as if he was written by someone else. He doesn't have a sense of fate. He doesn't have a sense of the inevitable.
Well, you didn't intend for him to have it anyway.
No.
At certain points, do you have to think about that as you're developing the story and the character?
I have to think about it in this regard. Do I have a sense of fate, even though I'm a Presbyterian? Do I have a sense of the inevitable? No, I don't. I think, you know, it's pretty much ants on a cupcake.
But there is always that other thing, like what might have been if certain things hadn't happened.
Yeah.
And we ask ourselves that question all the time. To some degree, that's what his mother would have asked herself because she finds herself trapped in a small town when she is definitely somebody who thinks she should have been in a bigger place. And
exactly.
And Dell is also trapped by the circumstances of his life.
It's true. I think probably one of the most poignant feelings that we have, whether we're children or adults, is that feeling of being able to look over our shoulder and see where we were a day before after some huge change has taken place, and just look and see that unoccupied space and think that we can't get there now. There's an image in the book in which the adult Dell posits a boat sort of being carried out to sea by the tide, and poignantly you can see the land receding and you can't get there.
My guest is Richard Ford, whose latest novel is called Canada. It's published by Echo. Dell quotes Ruskin saying that composition is the arrangement of unequal things. Does this turn out to be more than symbolic for him? And is it something that you think about when you're composing?
They are the same, really. Composing a book is always the composition of unequal things, things large and things small. I think making sense of your life and trying to find proportion of your life involves intercalating large things and small, important things and unimportant things.
The book begins in Great Falls, Montana, a place you've written about before. What is it about that setting that keeps you coming back to it?
Well, I think I'm a comer backer. I think I'm a guy who
you bring back some characters in other books as well.
I do. I think that's just how my mind operates. When I'm able to write successfully about a place, I usually come to think that that's just been precursive to something that I can write maybe that's even better. I mean, I did it with the Frank Bascom books, three long books in which I just kind of went back. I think lots of writers do that. That every book that they write is not different from every other book that they write.
Well, I've asked writers about this, whether a character died or just disappeared the day they completed the book. And some say, yes, I just move on. And others say, well, no, that voice remained with me because it was there for the 2 or 3 years I was working on the book.
And it may be that that voice begins to be able to utter new things. For me, it's always been the case. I mean, I'm not much of a person who believes in character. I don't know that we have characters, but I do know that we can speak in different voices, and in oftentimes, though, some of those voices are actually truth-telling. Not all of them, but some of them are truth-telling, and I think that's what I found with Frank Bascom. I think that's what I found with some of these books set in Montana, a kind of way of talking that seems plausible to me.
Mm-hmm. Then that's why some writers write unreliable narrators, because they find themselves drifting into that way of thinking. Part of the way you think when you write a book.
I just think of all narrators as being unreliable simply because we as readers have got to read what's on the page and try to understand if we can make sense of it at all. So, and it always involves a kind of basic skepticism on the reader's part.
Dell's father and mother feel very much like outsiders in Montana, and his father complains that people are hard and unfriendly in that part of the country. How is Montana different from the Alabama that his father grew up in?
Well, if you're asking me as a native Mississippian, I would say to you that at least among white people, when I was growing up, there was a kind of a sort of a faux politesse. People were outwardly very sweet to each other. inwardly, they were like a lot of other people. And if you were an African-American living in that environment, you may not believe anything I say. But in Montana, I have found that people are actually no less friendly, but a good deal less polite.
So it's just a matter of regional style?
I think it is.
Because Midwesterners have the reputation of being very friendly, smiling at you all the time. You just grow up with everybody else doing it, so you do it?
I think so.
But in your case, you've moved all over the country. So are you confused?
No, I may be confused. There's always a possibility of that. But I have maintained that Southern sense. I know that for a fact, that I'm polite. Generally polite. There would be some people who we could talk about who don't think I'm very polite, but mostly I try to be polite. But I mean, it's a convention, as you say. That's the way Dell's father, a Southerner, perceives the people out on the Montana prairies to be. I don't think that's necessarily true about them. They do seem to be a little. They're certainly not taciturn, but they seem to me to be a little blunter in the things that they say.
What about the people in Saskatchewan where Dell winds up?
Well, I just made them up.
You haven't been to Saskatchewan?
Oh, lots of times. But I generally don't accord to people certain racial, ethnic, societal traits. I just feel like it's my job to make people up. And if try to make them up plausibly in a way that they, were they to read it, would think, yes, that's right. Because I don't think those generalities much apply to human life.
But we do have a sense of what Canadians are like from the writers we know from Canada, like Alice Munro, for example. And
well, we have our American sense of what Canadians are like, but I don't know if that complies with the way Canadians think. I mean, you know, being a novelist, you're a person who deals in specifics. You're an Aristotelian, and for me, specifics are all that matter. So I don't. When I wrote this book, setting it in Canada, I didn't think to myself, what would a typical Canadian say and how would that person say it? Because I don't think there are such things as typical Canadians. You're just as apt to find somebody who's loquacious, somebody who's taciturn. They run the gamut just as every place else.
Oh, well, we were just talking earlier about style. In the book, you write that Dell's father stands out in Montana because he is so polite and has Southern manners.
Yes.
But in that way, people are different. Dell feels like he's not from anywhere because his father's Air Force career meant that the family moved around so much, and because his mother was especially dismissive of ordinary people and their market town mentality. Is this something that gets handed down from parents to kids?
Well, I suppose a lot of things get handed down from parents to kids, but at some point the kid has got to decide if he buys it or doesn't buy it.
Well, his sister is quite different than he is, even though they're twins.
Right. And it was interesting to write twins because they could be so different, because I think most people conventionally think that twins are more alike than they are dissimilar. For me, it was much more engaging to try to write about them as if the twin part of their life was the least important part.
Well, they're not identical twins, of course. And she runs away without him. He tries to live by the rules.
He does. And actually, finally, in the book, by trying to live by the rules, becomes a success in life.
A success of sorts.
Yeah, well,
you have a feeling that maybe he could have achieved a lot more. This is a really bright guy. But he has to settle for what's available to him.
Well, for me, in this book, the fact that he ends up living in Windsor, Ontario, happily married, having had a life as a teacher, feeling rewarded by those things, having survived all the things that he survived, I don't think that's a compromised success.
But he also, I don't want to give away too much of the book, but he also wonders whether he has somehow escaped punishment.
Yes.
Now, he hasn't done anything wrong.
Well, he's done a couple of things wrong. He helped bury two corpses.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do that. And he was complicit, at least passively, to the murder of two people, although he was a child. And it happened in his presence, and he had no volition over whether it happened or not. So I think he just feels a residue of responsibility for what he was helplessly involved in, and he wonders if he shouldn't be punished for that.
But he is affected by the impulsive bad decisions that adults make.
Absolutely. But I don't think that absolves you from a sense of responsibility from your participation, whatever its nature.
Although kids even feel responsible for when their parents break up and get divorced.
Right. And there are certain things we feel responsible for and we should shed. And there are certain things that we feel responsible for and we should buy.
Richard Ford's latest novel is Canada. It is published by Echo. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Great pleasure to see you again.